This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. We invite your calls at 877-217-5757. Send emails, if you so choose, to talk@talklouisiana.org. Alondra Villarreal producing, and in the house is the president of Guarantee Broadcasting, Flynn Foster, who wears many hats in this city. And, of course, he grew up in broadcasting with his father, the legendary George Foster. But he is here this morning as the person who heads a group that is trying its best to get the CATS tax renewed. The funding for our bus system is on the ballot a week from Saturday, and Flynn Foster is chairman of FastPAC. It's leading the effort to renew the millage. If you're a property owner, ballpark, if you have a house that's about $300,000, you're probably going to pay $300 a year or so in tax money for a bus system that many believe is vital to our community. Now, Stephanie Regal, in her latest column in the Business Report, says few agencies in Baton Rouge are more vital to the people than the Capital Area Transit System. In a city where nearly 25% of residents live below the poverty level, a vibrant mass transit system is not just an enhancement on the quality of life, it's a lifeline. But yet, many people are saying it's poorly run, the buses aren't running on time, they're not running at all, they're finding trouble hiring people, that CATS is a mess, and why should we reward them for bad behavior? How do you answer those naysayers, Flynn Foster?
Well, Jim, first, thanks for having me here. It's really good to see you, probably pre-COVID since I saw you last. You know, over the, I like to read. I like to try to enhance what I know, and because all I know is what I know, and I need to continue to search out additional information through the years. I have read two very important articles I found that talk about the health of a city. And you can look at two things to determine the health of a city. One is the vibrancy of its downtown, and the other is how good is its public transportation. And we've made a lot of progress, I believe, in both of those over the last number of years. But public transportation is crucial. If CATS has issues it still needs to work on from a management issue, certainly they need to continue to do that. We all need to get better at what we do at our own companies and everything. Be careful about throwing stones. Mm-hmm. And if the millage is not renewed, it's about $17 million total dollars per year, and it's a 10-year renewal. If we don't have that, then what are we saying as a city? That we just don't care about some people who have no other choice. There are people who ride this bus, do not have a brand new car in the driveway and are just riding the bus for the heck of it. They have to ride it. 91% of the people who use the bus every day don't have any other means of transportation. And well, we have to offer that to them.
This tax, if you will, it's about 60% or more of the overall budget, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah. Without it, CATS, as we know it today, would go away.
Okay. 877-217-5757. You say it'll go away. So what happens if it's a no vote a week from Saturday? Are there any options that would keep it alive for a while, pending? Well,
yeah, certainly. Still 40% of their budget comes from other things, so go away might be hyperbole. But let's just assume that it's not at the level that it has been at, and so many people rely on it. And another great reason to do it is for every dollar invested in public transportation, there's usually close to a $7.50 return to the community. So over the next 10 years, it's over $1 billion of economic development would come from this this tax millage renewal.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to get in with Flynn Foster, Morgan and Gardier. Morgan, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I just wanted to call in to offer a word of support to the renewal of this millage. There's a lot of talk right now of not having enough employees for our major businesses. And long term, I know Baton Rouge is really trying to make this a city where we attract the constant growth of Fortune 500 companies, and those companies need their people to be able to get to work. When we talk about people need to be working and they need to be supporting themselves and pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, well, they have to have a means in order to do that. So the renewal of this tax is necessary. And yes, cats may have had some issues in the past, but things don't get better by divesting in them. They get better by pouring our resources and our work into them.
All right. Thank you, Morgan. She makes an eloquent presentation for renewal.
Can I offer her something?
Certainly.
Come sit in this seat right now, because she described it way better than I did.
She's pretty good, but it would be a statement. Now, some people say it'd be a very good statement, but most people, I think, in our community realize, even if they're against this, they realize that there's some implications in being against it. And you and I, probably to a lesser extent, we circulate with people of means, and some people of means, you know, if you have $1 million home, you're paying probably over $1,000 a year in taxes on this.
Right.
And they say, and most people who have $1 million homes don't ride the bus. So
correct.
How do you get to those people?
Well, I don't know how. I've tried through some messaging I've done with them individually as they found out I was involved in this. And, you know, to me, it's, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of, some of Morgan pointed out, all kinds of reasons to do that. The biggest issues in Baton Rouge, as we all know, or North Baton Rouge, you know, there's not as many jobs up there. The majority of the jobs are in South Baton Rouge, and the majority of the jobs are not, you know, lawyer, doctor, engineer, you know, banker or anything like that. How are we going to get them here when 91% of the people who use it have no other means of transportation, and 63%, almost two out of three, mm-hmm. use it five times a week or more? They have no other options. And, you know, look, cats, the problem, I've been thinking about this, the problem for cats is you can see how well it's doing. You can or make a judgment, because if you look at a bus and there's you in your mm-hmm. opinion, there's not enough people on there, or there's one person on there, or whatever. And those are some things CATS is addressing. But it's a lot of government stuff just kind of goes into the ether. But this is like, oh, that's where my money's going. Nobody's on the bus. It's, you know, it's not always true, and it's just a small snapshot. So there's always things that need to be improved. CATS had made tremendous progress leading up to COVID. And COVID obviously knocked all of us on our backside. And as we come out of it, hopefully, fingers crossed for everybody, from a personal and business standpoint, that we will continue to make progress there and provide a transportation system everybody in this community can be proud of.
You're hearing the voice of Flynn Foster. He is the chairman of FastPack, leading the effort to renew the millage on behalf of CATS. The election is the 13th, a week from Saturday, as in 10 days from now. John in South Downs. John, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, thank you. Lynn, first of all, I want to say that I am all in favor of public transportation. But the concern is, if a scaled-back version of CATS would be more logical and a better sell, if you would scale it back and make it very efficient, make it highly successful, that people to invest more. As far as the investment, $7.5, dollars, I don't know how true that is. I mean, that sounds like a sell job, but we all know how important it is. We want everyone to be able to get to work. We want everyone to be able to contribute. But the easy sell would be to make it successful, scale it back, and show the people that it's worth investing in.
Your thoughts about scaling it back? Some believe that that's the last thing we need to do. If anything, it's not as robust as it should be, But John makes some points that I'm sure are shared by many in our audience. Flynn?
I know, and I appreciate those comments. And John, I pulled those numbers from the Blanco Center for Public Policy, which shows what the transit systems do. And I did a little Googling knowing this interview was coming up. Be careful what you read on the internet, of course. But this was a study done in Wisconsin, and it was had to do with some public transportation things there. And the numbers were very, very similar. Every dollar invested in public transportation, there's a $7.40 return to the community. And so scaled back, I think, you know, well, if we vote, if it doesn't pass, we'll see scaled back.
In a big way.
In a very big way.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on with Flynn. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'm going to vote for the millage. We do need public transportation, but we need public transportation for more than the people that just don't have any transportation. How about just the average guy? And if you take the bus from Broussard Hall to Cortana, that's a nightmare, man. That's all I got.
Well, no, I appreciate the comments again. Let's be the first to say, I have never plotted bus routes in my life, and I am not the expert on that, so I don't want to pretend that I am. And I know there's things that CATS has been working on, you know, to improve bus routes and, you know, a number of additional routes and everything that have – a lot of them have been knocked back since COVID hit.
877-217-5757. We'll take a 90-second break, and then we'll return and hear more from – Flynn Foster, pushing hard for the renewal of the CATS bus tax. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. One more segment with Flynn Foster, Baton Rougean through and through, president of Guarantee Broadcasting for the last 10 years, and his father, George Foster, the late man who was a pioneer in the media industry. He died a few years ago. When was it?
April of 2018,
same month that we lost Gus Wilde. Two Titans.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. But Gus, a little bit more of a outgoing character than my father, though.
But your father was a powerhouse and a good man, and cared about this community. And Flynn, in addition to his day job, he's involved heavily with the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters. Also, he last year was head of the whole Baton Rouge Area Chamber entity, and now he is chairman of FASPAC, which is pushing hard for renewal of the CATS tax. A week from Saturday is the vote, although early voting has been in progress. So if you have a comment for or against, we'll get you in under the wire if we can. Let's go to Jim downtown. Jim, please be brief. You're on with Flynn. Good morning, Jim.
Hi. I've lived in town for 25 years. When I moved here, if you weren't on your bus by 4 in the afternoon, you weren't getting home that day. The buses didn't run on the weekends, same kind of deal, pretty much. No, not at all on Sunday. So you couldn't do things with your kids. You couldn't go shopping. It was very difficult. I served on the CTC board when we expanded service 20 years ago. And, that was the first time I could take my kids to the movies. I could go shopping or the doctor when I needed to. Those are the kind of things that affect people's lives. We do cutting the system back ain't going to fix anything.
All right, Flynn. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And things have gotten much more efficient since Jim's 25 years here in Baton Rouge. CATS promised in about, I guess it was 2012 or 2011, they would add GPS tracking to their fleet with exact arrival times, you know, that you could access on your cell phones. Smartphone app track, bus arrival times are now available. They've added public Wi-Fi security cameras on buses. They've increased peak hour bus. Well, they said they would do it from 32 buses to 57. They're currently operating 44 buses, and they've reduced the age of the fleet by 50%. I think the average age of the fleet bus is 4-point-something years, and it was more than 9 a few years ago. So they've made a lot of progress. And going back to Jim's point, I keep thinking of the one lady who has no other way to get to the grocery store to buy her kids groceries or to get to a job working at, Our Lady of the Lake or something like that, who lives, let's just say, in North Baton Rouge or down in, you know, other places where you need that kind of transportation. And I just don't feel like personally I can say, let's leave her behind.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates, you're on with Flynn Foster. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, I do not think that last caller ever uses a bus. But that being said, yeah, I agree. Things have gotten a lot more efficient in transportation. It's called Uber and Lyft. We didn't have that 10 years ago. And I can tell you, I rent to a lot of low-income people, and none of them take the bus. They all take Uber or Lyft, or they walk there or take the bike, because the bus is very unreliable. And I don't know how many times I've been driving down Jefferson Highway, and you get stuck behind one of those buses that just stops there and parks. All the traffic it creates, the fossil fuels these buses.
All right. By the way, there are some buses now that are electric, but Patrick's not a fan. I think we got that impression.
Yeah, he's not a fan, and the majority of the buses going forward at the millage renews will be electric going forward. So, and if you have more public transportation, again, not a 100% expert on this, it means less people driving cars, you know, so It seems like it would be more environmentally friendly.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Flynn. Good morning, Dan.
Yes. For the white folks of means who propose scaling back services for those without means, often people of color, might one suggest that what really needs scaling back is bailing out Wall Street every time it makes a bad bet on investments?
All right. Well, Flynn, I think is, I don't know him real well, but I know him well enough to think that he, to make a pretty good summation that he's a conservative, and you're a businessman, and you're a white guy, as am I.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fit the profile of being out there on the hustings saying, go Cats. So what got into you?
Going back to what I said a minute ago, it's, you know, there are reasons to do this from an economic standpoint. We know how challenged employers have been to fill their staffs with COVID and everything. So you can say that. And then there's also altruistic reasons to do it. You know, do we want to make Baton Rouge or do I think what's going to make Baton Rouge better is to not renew this or to renew it? And I think, you know, that's just the reason why. My family has been in business in this town for almost a century. We have benefited greatly from Baton Rouge. It has made us who we are. And it's not people in South Baton Rouge, people in North Baton Rouge. I don't define it that way. The community has made us successful, and I, in my heart, need to give back. And this is one of the ways I feel we need to do it.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with Flynn Foster.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. I would see like the savings on fuel costs. I mean, the more things go electric, the more money you would save on fuel. And I think that sometimes, you know, that equipment, once it's paid for, you don't have to put fuel in it anymore. You know what I mean? I'm saying for the way those electrics work. Anyway, thanks.
Well, you say that electric is the wave of the future, not only for the public at large, but the bus system already has how many electric vehicles, do you know?
Oh, I'm looking through my notes and can't find it right now, but I do know that the new buses that are coming online, I think it's 10 or 12 of the next 19 buses that are supposed to be purchased will be electric.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Gia in Melrose. Gia, you're on with Flynn Foster. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I am all for public transportation since at one point I had to rely on it. But it is very frustrating that many times it's not on time. And so it's, to me, I feel like it is a very good thing to do for the city. I wish it would be better so we can depend more on public transportation so I can leave my car in my house. But if I don't know if you have ever ride a bus, but if you haven't, can you? I will invite you to do it so you can experience how it is today.
Gia, that's a good thing. You know, in 2011, CATS promised to decrease peak hour wait times between buses from the average then of 75 minutes to 15 minutes. Before the pandemic, 85% of the routes had a 30-minute frequency during periods, and on-time performance had improved to over 70%. So they had not gotten to the 15 minutes, which I think most people would say that's a reasonable time to wait for a bus. But it's way, way better than the 75 minutes it was before. And there's more improvement to be done on that.
Now, this tax passed, and it was a narrow vote, and it was passed largely through a heavy turnout in North Baton Rouge in April of 2012. So we're coming up on 10 years. And there were some promises made. Flynn, some say they weren't kept. And, you know, like most promises, you do your best. And on the whole, were most of them kept?
They were mostly kept. They're meant to overhaul the bus stops with new shelters and benches. 177 new bus shelters, either new ones or refurbished ones. Again, the wait time that has been decreased dramatically. The GPS tracking, which is there, the signage has been made better. Is CATS a finished product? No. Will it have a chance to get mm-hmm. there over the next 10 years of this millage? You know, I certainly believe they're piloting a microtransit in Baker, where it's not the big buses. You don't need the big 30, 35-foot long buses, much smaller buses. So there's different things like that. We got a $15 million grant from the Department of Transportation, the federal government, because Baton Rouge has chosen to support the bus system. Those kind of things go away. It's kind of like when you want to improve the roads. The federal government wants to know, what are you putting into mm-hmm. it before we give you some money? So,
well, thank you for stopping by, and hopefully we'll have you back. This man's an authority on a few different topics, but Flynn Foster, good to see you. Looking healthy, a COVID survivor.
I did. I had it and made it through. God bless all of those who have struggled with it. Business-wise, rough year last year, better the year this year. We're built for the long haul at Guarantee. That's what we want to say.
Are you vaccinated?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Good deal. Good deal. Thank you, Flynn. We'll be back with Quinn Hillier, conservative columnist and commentator. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We turn the page and we go to national politics, maybe a little local as well, with Quinn Hillier, homegrown Louisiana transplant now in the great state of Alabama. And Quinn Hillier is a nationally, in some cases internationally, recognized conservative voice on the political spectrum. He's been with us many times, as you know, and last night was a big night for American conservatives, with victories, it appears, in both Virginia and New Jersey, states won heavily by Joe Biden just a couple years ago, as in last year. Actually, I think it was 1 year ago today. But last night was a different story, as Terry McAuliffe, former chair of the Democratic Party and former governor of Virginia, was defeated in his quest to become governor once again in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And it appears, albeit very close, that Phil Murphy in New Jersey is also on the ropes and perhaps out of a job in the great state of New Jersey, which is a solid blue state, although they have elected Republican governors, most notably Chris Christie in recent time. But your thoughts, Quinn, about what in the world's going on in American politics right now?
Well, thanks for having me on with you, Jim. And I do have to say that the latest numbers I'm getting from New Jersey are indicating that it will probably be a very narrow hold for Democrat incumbent Phil Murphy. It does look like, where the vote is still out, that he will keep his very, very narrow lead. That's not for sure, but the Democrats look like they might have dodged a bullet there, which would have been a much bigger earthquake politically than Virginia, even, because nobody or very, very few people had Republicans having a chance at getting the governorship of New Jersey. That said, you asked a question about what is going on. What is going on is a fairly standard backlash against overreach by the party of a new administration. This has happened time and again. A new president gets in, he tries to push too far, to do too much too soon, and frankly, too much of the extremes, and there is a backlash. And it happened in 2009 in Virginia, when Obama went too far too fast. It happened in it happened after Bill Clinton went too far too fast in 1992. Republicans swept to a majority in Congress in 1994. There's a lesson here, and the lesson is that the American people is broadly in the center. It is not at either extreme, and the politicians better start realizing it.
877-217-5757. And by the way, I get several emails a day from an email account that's listed as that being from Donald J. Trump. I have a feeling that's I'm on a very long list, but so far nothing from those accounts about what happened. But in both of these cases in New Jersey, Murphy, you say he may have held on, and I'm sure there'll be a recount, but if he does, he was way ahead in the polls, and ultimately, if he won, it's by a few votes. And then in Virginia, McAuliffe was ahead recently, and the candidate there who unseated him, it appears, a businessman, kind of like Eddie Rasponi, who hadn't been a Politico, but he comes in, and Glenn Youngkin is the new governor of Virginia, or will be. Both of these guys, they were very careful not to latch on to Trump real closely. What do you make of the fact that here we have a couple of Republicans who won and one may have lost, but very closely, better than expected race, and both divorced themselves from the Donald?
There's a lesson in that for Republicans, too, which is that Donald Trump is death in a general election. This guy in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, ran a very un-Trumpy campaign. He ran an upbeat Ronald Reagan kind of campaign, forward-looking, lots of smiles, lots of lots of upbeat good humor. And he did not demonize the opponent. He did not. Now, he might have talked tough on some issues, but he did not demonize Terry McAuliffe. He did not demonize the people that disagreed with him. And so he did not run a Trumpy campaign. And he made major comebacks compared to what Trump had done in the suburbs in Virginia. Republicans cannot win consistently unless they do well in the suburbs, but not just soccer moms, but soccer dads. And so Republicans should learn, move on from Donald Trump. He had his moment, but he is not the future.
877-217-5757. But Youngkin used this issue of critical race theory to his advantage, and it's been pointed out it's not being used in Virginia, but it worked. And
yes, it is. It is. I just got something, not to interrupt you, which I just did, and I'm sorry, but I just got something the other day from Virginia school boards, what they sent to their principals. That specifically say this is what we're trying to teach. It named critical race theory. This was from a year or so ago. It said this is one of the things that we want to teach, and there's also a lot of.
All right, now you say want to teach. That doesn't mean it is being taught, does it?
Yes, it does. It you pull out the textbooks, you pull out the curriculum, you pull out the mission statements from these schools, and they are teaching that whiteness is bad. They are teaching that that America was founded on racism. They are teaching all of this racially charged stuff.
All right, now,
which is absolute utter nonsense.
Well, America was founded by racists. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But
there's a difference between that and saying that the reason for founding America was racism.
All right, I agree with you. But how are kids in Virginia being taught that whiteness is bad?
Jim, just Google it. It is. All over the place. People have posted the textbooks. They've posted the assignments. They've posted the curriculum. They've posted the mission statement. It is all over these schools. And for some reason, the media comes in and says, oh, we can't find the words critical race theory in this particular, and they pull out some tiny little thing. And they ignore all the rest of the stuff that's putting out. Literally, it says whiteness is bad.
All right. Well, McAuliffe is no longer the governor of Virginia. Why is he getting the brunt of this?
It's not that. Well, first of all, this was not a vote against McAuliffe. It was a vote for an upbeat, positive guy named Glenn Youngkin. And it was a vote against it was also definitely a vote nationally against the direction of the
right.
Biden administration and the national Democrats who have gone way too far left.
Okay. Now, polls in the last few weeks had McAuliffe up at 14 points in one poll. Now, arguably, the last few polls have shown Youngkin ahead, but Some people are saying, once again, pollsters didn't really get the pulse of this until very late, if at all. Well, your thoughts about why the polls were so wrong?
Well, the polls, as you said, they actually did close in the last 2 weeks, and the average of polls at Real Clear Politics going into yesterday had Youngkin up by 0.8%.
And it appears 0.8. That's exactly.
And he ended up.
Go ahead.
He ended up winning by, I think, 2 points. So, you know, the polls basically got right there. Where they were wrong was New Jersey, because New Jersey, even going into the final day, had Murphy up by 8 points. And if he wins, which he probably will, it's only going to be by no more than a percentage point. That's where the polls were really wrong. That's why I said if the Republican had won there, it would have been an absolute political earthquake.
All right. You've been banned from Twitter. What did you do, Quinn?
I recited a very, very famous line from Saturday Night Live in response to somebody who literally put on Twitter, as just sort of a game, said, "Say something that shows that you watched Saturday Night Live in the 1970s. And so his name was John, which, of course, sounds a little bit like Jane. So I immediately replied, "John, you ignorant slut," which, if anybody watched in the 70s and anybody that lived in America for the next two decades knew that "Jane, you ignorant slut" was a very famous catchphrase. Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin did this point counterpoint thing, and Jane Curtin would say something, and Dan Aykroyd would always start his answer by saying, "Jane, you ignorant slut." And then she would say, "Dan, you pompous ass." And it was the way they did it in context. It was hilariously funny. So I that's what I said. And the guy that had asked for the examples, he retweeted, he liked it. It was exactly what he wanted. But Twitter, they must have had some computer bot or something and didn't like the word slut. And they accused me of fomenting hate and harassment. And they banned me.
And it's been banned, right? You can't. You're not back yet, are you?
I'm not back yet, and now they provide for an appeal. So I immediately appealed, wrote a very polite note, and said, "Maybe you're too young to know that this was a catchphrase." And I explained the context and explained that I wasn't harassing the guy. The guy liked it; he thought it was funny. And within an hour, they said, "Your appeal has been denied." And since then, I've tried about six different channels and have not gotten the courtesy of another reply, and I remain banned.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to an update. And, Quinn, I think conservatives like you have a reason to thump your chest, and congratulations on your win. So thank you, my friend, and let's talk soon.
Well, thank you very much. But let me say.
Hold on for a second. We'll be back. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we're going to spend a few more minutes with Quinn Hillier. I didn't want to cut him off in midstream, but congratulations, by the way, to the Atlanta Braves. Champions of the world for the first time since 1995. The Braves beat the Astros last night 7-0 in Houston and win the series 4-2. And the Astros, their one title was in 2017 when they cheated. Quinn Hillier, no allegations of voter fraud yet, but you were going to say something as we hit the brakes and went to the break about last night. I didn't want to deprive you of the chance to finish your thought.
You had just said congratulations. Conservatives like you are celebrating a victory, and I just want to say, yes, specifically conservatives like me who like people like Glenn Youngkin, who run campaigns and who have an outlook that is upbeat, smiling, and friendly, not snarling like a certain former president.
All right. Well, yesterday we had Roy Fletcher, a man I know you know well, on this show, and he said that if Donald Trump is hale and hearty, he's quite likely to be your party's nominee in 2024. Is that still a given?
It is not a given, but it is more likely than not, and that would be a disaster for the Republican Party, a disaster for the country, and a disaster for the world.
Well, let's hope you get your Twitter privileges back. Thank you, Quinn.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate
it. All right. Take care. And we're joined now by Ilse Govan. She is an anti-racist facilitator, consultant, leadership coach, activist, co-founder of Cultures Connecting, and she has combined with Tillman Smith for one of the most provocative books of the year, What's Up with White Women? Unpacking Sexism and White Privilege in Pursuit of Racial Justice. Good morning to you, Ilse.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it is a provocative book, and you say that white women often hijack race conversations. How so?
Yeah, well, white women have, for a long time, had to work hard to combat sexism in our lives. And because of that, we've developed strategies particularly effective for working around white men, like, going to being really direct and sure and right and not feeling like we can make any mistakes. And so becoming defensive when we get feedback that we're messing up, or going to even tears when we get feedback that kind of assert that we're still good people. Don't you see me? I'm a good person. And this is a really effective strategy in navigating sexism and dealing with white men. It can shift the conversation, give us a little bit of power, even though it's a bargain, right? Because we're also asserting our need for their care if we end up crying. And so in race conversations, we maladapt these tools. We get feedback that we're doing something racist, and we become defensive. We, center ourselves in the conversation. We start to cry, and then people of color are seen as aggressive or, being uncaring. And we don't actually get to address the real issues of racism that are going on in our interpersonal relationships and in the workplace. For the short answer.
All right. 877-217-5757 for Ilse Govan. The book is What's Up with White Women? Unpacking Sexism and White Privilege in Pursuit of Racial Justice. Dr. Peggy McIntosh, the author of White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack, says this book helps white women with two simultaneous character-forming tasks, healing from wounds of sexism and using the power received from privilege to weaken racism in ourselves and in the world. So white women do experience, I'm sure, prejudice as a result of being a woman, but not the kind of prejudice you, or not you, but others would face as a black woman. So there is a distinction, and in your judgment, do white women really appreciate that distinction?
I think that that can give us, our experiences with sexism could be a point of connection with women of color. And too often, because our whiteness, because of our whiteness, we feel like our way of experiencing race, our racialized identity, isn't a racialized identity. We think that it's the norm, that it's how everybody experiences the world. And so, unfortunately, when women of color have tried to connect with us throughout our history in the United States, we have questioned their reality. We've become experts on their reality, saying things like, well, are you sure that that's about race because of X, Y, and Z, other explanation that I have because I know your reality better than you do? Or we just miss the opportunity to really work in collaborative partnerships because we actually, because we've internalized some sense of superiority because of our whiteness. And that shows up. It's shown up in the way that I've tried to work with women of color, even in doing anti-racism work, where I micromanaged, took over what they were doing, assumed that my voice was the one that was always needed. So it's a missed opportunity, and I hope that this book will help white women to see how we can better collaborate.
Again, 877-217-5757, and a listener asks about Black, Indigenous, People of Color. This acronym is BIPOC, B-I-P-O-C, and it's been used now quite frequently, and in your book. You say that white women harm this group, Black, Indigenous, people of color, by colluding with systems of oppression. How so?
Yeah, Yeah, well, the primary way that white women access privilege, power, and control in the workplace and in our everyday lives is through our relationships with white men. And so we've made a bargain where we are willing to cause harm to people of color in order to get the benefits of that access. So if you think about it this way, white men are making the rules in our society. They've designed institutions for white men that serve primarily, or were designed to serve white men. And then white women are in this buffer zone where we are the ones who have more direct contact with people of color. So white men are making the rules and white women are enforcing this. And we see this at the most extreme in cases like Amy Cooper calling the police on Christian Cooper in Central Park on the day that George Floyd was murdered by the police. She knew she was weaponizing a system designed to protect her innocence in the service of white men. And that's just, I mean, that's one example, but there's many other examples in my life where I have done the same thing. I've gone along to get along in order to get my needs met.
All right. Well, I've often mentioned on this show that we can't generalize and say a particular demographic group is bad because of the actions of people in that group. And previous guest had a point that I think is certainly relevant and is playing well politically for the conservatives, and that's this mantra that, as he put it, that whiteness is bad, and if you're white and you feel like you're being discriminated against simply because you're white, does that also have some dire implications?
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting question, even in the way that you frame that, because too often, I think that we talk about racism in a good-bad binary. And so to be racist is clearly bad. But we mistakenly believe that the opposite of racist is good. And the opposite of racist isn't good. The opposite of racist is anti-racist. And so if we spent less time trying to wrestle with this idea of, am I a good person, which really centers the person who's asserting their goodness in the conversation, and instead ask ourselves, what can I as a white person do to work against racism that is causing harm to people of color and causing harm to myself? Then I think that we'd be in a much better position in this country.
We're finishing up with Ilsa Govan. The book again is What's Up with White Women, Unpacking Sexism and White Privilege in the Pursuit of Racial Justice. You have a 6-stage identity development model for self-reflection and growth. Tell us more about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and again, this goes to this idea of this isn't about us being good or bad. We all have potential for growth in our lives. And the 6 stages, it's looking at different patterns of behaviors that we as white women, and using we because that's how I identify, move through our lives. And so this idea of like, okay, so I'm here and this is how I'm showing up, but there's a broader way of understanding. There's a broader way of understanding myself, and there's a better way of being in the world. And so identity development stages help us to think about, one, this isn't about shame and blame. And I'm not going to shame and blame myself for something that I did yesterday, and I'm not going to shame and blame myself for what I could or should do today. Right? That I need to just think about how can I shift? How can I better show up in the world? And I love this because we give people a way of thinking about, and here's some people like Peggy McIntosh, who've been doing this a lot longer than I have and are showing up in a different way that I hadn't even considered.
Well, we thank you for joining us. Ilsa Govan, again, the book's What's Up with White Women. Dr. Tyrone Howard, a professor at the UCLA Black Male Institute, says the work is much needed in this time of racial reckoning. And we look forward to a return visit if you're so inclined. It's been a pleasure. Ilsa, congrats on your work, and let's keep in touch. And thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For Alondra Villarreal, I'm Jim Inkster. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.